This podcast is brought to you by the Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards Program. For instant membership with complimentary companion pass, enter promo code HERMAN.
Menace to society.
I want to start this off by thanking the men and women that served this country and provided us with the freedoms we exercise daily. As we reflect on this Memorial Weekend that just ended, I just want to shout out anyone that served and ultimately the ones that gave the ultimate sacrifice to allow us the freedom to do things that we take for granted every day. Freedoms that are not free, that obviously are paid for with blood and lives that we often take for granted. This past weekend was not about taking a day off work and ignoring the reason we were offered and afforded the freedom to have a day off of work and grill out with our family. It was about honoring the men and women that gave the ultimate sacrifice to preserve our freedom. And I just want to thank you. I personally made it a point to talk to my kids about what Memorial Day means, what freedom means, the sacrifice our men and women make to protect us and our country. I didn't want them to eat a bratwurst and some mac and cheese and continue on their lives without understanding what the day meant and how thankful we should be. So we wanted to start this show off saying thank you. Every day I want to be an American worth protecting by showing gratitude for what it is you all do to give us the ability to enjoy the freedoms you fight to protect. Thank you for tuning in. We just want to kind of circle back and first of all, just thank you for everyone that listened to episode one. I mean, we had almost 25,000 listeners the first episode, which is unheard of when it comes to a startup podcast, an initial episode. And so we really just want to thank you for listening. Again, like we said, the first episode, whether it was out of support, out of hate, out of entertainment, it doesn't really matter. We hope we are providing you with a venue to provide either insight or entertainment or whatever it is. But just want to say thanks for listening. And hopefully this episode only enhances your experience with this podcast. The feedback we got was outstanding. We have heard a number of different things, a number of criticism, a great response, and it's going to help drive this podcast moving forward, and it was really phenomenal.
Yeah, I was looking through the feedback on the comments, and I saw it was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, right.
And I did see a few, though, like when you said that you never wanted to get back into coaching,
mm-hmm.
and they were questioning you, like, that's probably not true.
But yeah, I saw some things like that too.
Is that not true, or would you ever get back into coaching?
You know what? So I've obviously thought about this a lot in the last 9 months, and I don't have any desire to. For me to even consider it, it would have to be a ridiculous opportunity, which is not going to happen anyways. And I always think back to something that used to happen all the time when we were in staff rooms and watching film. And we used to watch film, and let's say it was Illinois versus Toledo. And we'd watch the film, and Urban would run the clicker, and we'd be watching the film, and it would go to the scoreboard shot, you know, to show you the score, the time, the situation. And he would sit there and rewind it like 7 times, and everyone else would be sitting in the room, all the other coaches, like, what is he doing? Like, why does he keep rewinding it? Then he'd pause it and go, you know what, boys? I don't love it enough to do that again. Like, go back to that level. And it used to resonate with me, like, man, once you make it to that level at Ohio State, Alabama, somewhere like that, or the NFL.
No going back.
It's just like, it would be really hard to get motivated to go coach in that environment again. Especially if you're me and you know, you have kids in Columbus, and you would have to move away, not see your kids. Like, no, I got no desire to do that at all. So, To respond to the people that brought that up, no, I don't want to coach again. And to be honest with you, the only thing I miss about coaching is my interaction with my players. And what's really cool, and I've done this minimally because of time while I was coaching, but what's been so cool is the interaction I've had with my kids coaching, basically. I mean, my son plays baseball. My daughter plays softball. It's been unbelievable. And even interacting, like, my son's on a travel baseball team, which is – you talk about commitment, 9-year-old travel baseball. Whoo,
yep.
It's wild, but it's been really fun. It's been really fun to get involved with. And I got a text from so there's a kid on my son's baseball team, like they all are. So 9-year-old baseball's coach or travel kid pitch first time, and so they struggle with like that psychological element of
oh, they might get hit by a baseball.
Yeah, they might get hit by a baseball, right? And so there's one kid on our team who is a tough kid. I mean, he's a hockey goalie, soccer goalie, like catcher. Like you talk about somebody that shouldn't be afraid to be hit by a ball. It's him. But my son's going through it too. He has this fear of getting hit. And so he has been struggling with batting. And what's funny is like when he goes to hit, like coach pitch or whatever, he's like the best hitter on the team, like ridiculous. And so his dad actually sent me a text, and it was phenomenal. It was like what I used to feel with my players, right? He texted me, and I'll read you a clip of it. Apparently his son had come home from school and brought up to him that he was trying to get over his fear of getting hit with a baseball, and he thinks he'll get it done before the season's over. And he was like, his dad said, well, that's great to hear. What really made me smile was that he said he appreciated the support from people. He said, I assumed he was referring to me and his mom, and I asked him if that's who he meant. And he said, yeah, but also Mr. Smith, you know, I can always hear him rooting for me. And I was like, wow, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That was what I loved about coaching. And I'm experiencing that on a whole different level with these 9-year-olds and my daughter's 7. And it's really cool because that's what I loved about it. And the only thing I do miss about coaching the only reason why I would ever even consider it again is I miss the interaction. I miss being in the locker room with the players, like building that relationship and the involvement. And what really is crazy, and it speaks to Ohio State and how they handled everything that happened with me, is they had a meeting with my players about me and basically told them, do not talk to him. This is a horrible PR situation for Ohio State. And mind you, these are kids that I was very close to, like very close to it. And I'd say a majority of them disobeyed those rules because, like, who is President Drake to tell one of those players not to talk to me? Like, that we have a very close relationship. They think President Drake's a clown because he is. Like, who is he to tell him that, right?
Yeah, and I know you saw, because I tweeted it from the Menace to Society podcast Twitter about the board of trustee that resigned.
Oh, yeah,
because of the rift with Drake.
How I mean, you talk about absolutely exposing who he is.
It makes sense, right?
Well, what's crazy is the whole investigation, he was behind a lot of it, and he was the entire reason why Urban Meyer got suspended. Because and you know, we kind of referenced it the first episode, but he was doing it all to preserve his own image. And having been around other presidents, and like Gordon Gee, wow. I mean, he made some off-the-cuff remarks that were inappropriate, and that's why he got fired. But what a phenomenal president.
He was a character. But yeah.
He was definitely a character. But Drake is just, I mean, there's not a, I don't know a person that respects or likes him. And you read it on social media. The Ohio State University scope of people, I mean, despise him. And for good reason. He's a clown. Complete clown.
Well, if you look at, I mean, this is outside of the athletic department, but if you look at it from the medical center standpoint, I mean, ever since he became president, they lost the top doctors in their facility. They all left. They all went to West Virginia to work for Gordon Gee.
Yeah.
I mean, they all left.
And I get it. Most people have never interacted with him, but coming from someone who has, it's the absolute worst thing to ever happen to Ohio State University. President Michael Drake. Not even close. There's no one that wants to work for him. He is a complete clown. And he is the reason why 90% of things are going wrong at Ohio State, from the medical center to the athletic department to the academics. If there's anyone that needs to be removed from Ohio State, it is him. If there's one person, it's him. And there's no better evidence than suspending Urban Meyer. There's no better evidence. He did it all because he wanted to preserve his own douchebag image, and he is running the board of trustees out. Just so we're clear, the board of trustees are way more important. They're the people with money, power. This guy is just a clown that's running the university. If anybody's got to go, Michael Drake has to go.
Well, I heard he gets blowjobs at the Woody also.
Oh, man. I wouldn't doubt it.
Just a rumor.
Yeah, I heard that.
I'm with you.
Episode one, right?
Yeah. For sure.
So on a somewhat related note, I mean, bringing up President Drake and everything like that that went into the investigation, I don't think you've ever really talked about it. What was the investigation like for you personally, dealing with all the media circus that went on?
Yeah. Well, it was so outside of the investigation itself and the scandal and the issues, it was really hard to go through. And I've talked to a number of people in person and via social media that have went through like really hard situations. And it was like nothing that I've ever experienced. And it was something that I can't really like explain entirely. It was really hard. I mean, you go from coaching at Ohio State, you're on this pedestal, you're on the top of the mountain, like you feel amazing about your life, where it's going. Your kids idolize you, not only like a kid idolizes their parent, but also, you know, they have this celebrity dad. And it was humbling. And it was really hard. I mean, the attention that it was given, and it was like I can't even explain. And so the hardest part, I think, was just the constant badgering of the media, and especially the local media. And it's funny because you don't really know. Like, you're coaching Ohio State, you do all these interviews with all these people, all these websites, all these TV stations, and everybody's your best buddy. Everybody is. And when something like this happens, you find out. You find out who's real. And like, just talking about local Columbus media, for example, but you can apply this to anything. Channel 4, NBC, whatever it is, they were respectable. You know, they obviously were the media, so they were trying to get interviews. They were trying to find out things. They had a couple people that were went a little too far, but they were normal. Channel 10, same way. I mean, there was one or two people that worked there that you're like, all right, you're kind of crossing some boundaries. Calm down. But for the most part, Channel 10 was really good. Now, ABC 6 on your side? Let me tell you something. They're not on your side. They sent a reporter to my house every day.
Every day.
And the best part is, like, you laugh, right? Like, this is normal life, right? This is normal human beings. Don't ring my doorbell with a cameraman. I look out the peephole and I see this girl, ABC 6 on your side girl, ringing my doorbell. She has a microphone in her face, and there's this fat guy back there with a camera videoing her at the door. And I'm sitting here like, do you think I'm going to open the door?
Hey, who opens the door for that? Right?
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if we should teach a journalism school, but you might want to talk to me beforehand and be like, hey, can we do an interview? Or no. And you know what I wanted to do so bad? After I got over it, like, initially it was hard. It was like, close the blinds. Like, I'm just going to go in my room. I don't even want to deal with these people. Like, I'm already getting destroyed in the public eye. I certainly don't want to talk to anyone. But then I started thinking it was funny because it went on for like 3 months. Like, after the story had died down, they're still sending this girl to my house. And I'm sitting here like, you know what I want to do? It's just open the door and just like berate her with this machine gun Nerf gun that my son has. Like, like, put that on the news, lady. ABC 6 on your side. Brrr. Like, it would have been so funny, but obviously didn't do that. But
I wish you would have.
No, but it was really hard. And you talk about like mental health. Like, I went through a lot of depression, a little bit of suicidal thoughts that were probably not suicidal thoughts, but it was the lowest of lows for me. And it felt like quicksand. Like, every time I felt like I got through it, like, some douchebag reporter would report some bullshit, and it would be like, here we go again. Hey, bro, get a life. Like, go do something else. Move on. I already got fired. Urban got suspended. Like, move on. I know you're, like, looking for clicks. You're looking for a story, but how about you just leave me and my family alone? Move on, right? Mm-hmm. And so coming out of it was the greatest feeling. And it was like, I turned to my faith and I really, it was about stabilizing my life. It was all about this. We were on this downward spiral, like in quicksand. And it was like, all right, how do we just like stop the bleeding, stabilize life, right? Once I was able to do that, it was like, all right, we can now like start over. And so came out the other end of it, and things are better than I could have ever imagined. It was a blessing. It was a blessing. The relationship I have with my kids now and how things are going, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, which is bizarre to say because it was the worst thing that ever happened to me also, you know?
That's just, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
It is nice to have you around more, though.
Yeah, no.
For sure. But kind of changing topics here. 2015, we have so much feedback, and we want to hear more about what happened in 2015. Because that team was loaded, and everyone, I think, thinks that they should have won the national championship, hands down. So yeah, what actually happened? I know you said Ed Warner.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you were going to pick one thing, that was it. And so I definitely want to dive into that a little bit, because here's the thing. My intention is not to sit here and just flippantly call people out and expose people for no reason.
For sure.
My intent is to expose people for who they are that deserve to be exposed. That's why I exposed what I did about Tom Herman. And there's plenty more about Tom Herman that I might or might not get into.
I hope you do.
Well, I might. But the moral story is, here's why I believe Ed Warner is fair game. Because he treats people horrifically. His ego is outrageous. And his wife is outrageous. And she was a lot like Michelle Herman, a lot like... She was on the same warpath to get me destroyed. And here's why. He got fired from Ohio State. And I didn't. And she was furious that her little hubby didn't get fired, or did get fired, and Zach Smith didn't get fired. And so she was reaching out to my ex-wife. She was reaching out to reporters that told me about it to try to expose me, try to get me fired, try to ruin me. And that's why Mary Beth, Edward needs to be discussed on Open Air. Because he mistreats people. He's a bad person. And so he's also the reason we didn't win the national championship. The most incompetent football coach I've ever been around. So let me just take you back, right? So I'm going to take you back to pre-Ed Warner being
the offensive coordinator.
So we're in the staff room in New Orleans at the Sugar Bowl, pre-playing Alabama. Sitting there with Tom Herman. He'd already taken the job at Houston. Him and I are sitting there late night in the hotel. We're working on a third down game plan against Alabama. It's just him and I. Everyone else was off with their families or doing whatever. And we're sitting there in the staff room, just kind of tying up loose ends, finishing the night so we can go be with our families. And he looked at me and he was like, "Zach, do you think Urban's really going to hire Ed to be the coordinator?"
He really said that.
And I looked at him and I was like, "I don't know. I mean, it looks like it. I mean, it makes sense. He was the co-OC, which is a bullshit title across the board, but he was the co-OC. So he looked at me, he said, "Zach, he can't even call a play, like verbalize a play." And I was like, "I know." And he was like, "Phew, well, prayers for you, bro. That's going to be an interesting story."
That'll be terrible.
So fast forward. So let's just go through what happened, right? Because 2015, I mean, you're talking about defending national champs. We lost a couple people, but we were more talented with those prime like pieces of the puzzle coming back. We're more talented in 2015. We're a better football team on paper in 2015. So we start off the winter. The winter is off-season workouts, grueling, right? Just I'm talking about Wednesday morning, 5:55 a.m. mat drills, like some almost inhumane stuff. So we go to the first team workout after recruiting. We go in there and the workout's over. It was a grind, and the players are exhausted. And so kind of after the workout, offense defense splits up, and he calls up the offense. Right, he calls up the offense, and understandably they're like a little relieved. The workout's over. There's some chatter going on, whatever. And he just kind of loses it. Goes, hey, look at me. I'm the captain now. And I mean, I'm talking about players and assistant coaches alike are looking around like, did he just say that? I'm the captain. Is this that movie? It's
Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips? I'm the captain now? Hey, bro, we read ESPN. We know you're the captain now. Chill out. And so what you saw was a deterioration of respect from the players to the captain. Slowly, as it went on through the winter. And spring ball is when he completely lost it. So we go in. We're in spring ball, and we start installing the offense, doing our deal, and we go to the first scrimmage, and I'll never forget it. It was bizarre. So we had never done this with Tom when he was the coordinator. We go in, and now we all have to wear headsets, and come to find out it was like a crutch for Ed because he couldn't call a play. He just was incapable. And so he starts trying to call the scrimmage, and we're simulating how it's going to be on game day, right? Like Ed's going to be in a box with Tim Beck, and I'm on the field. I'm going to be relaying the message from the coordinator to the quarterback. The quarterback, by the way, was either Cardale Jones or JT Barrett, or I guess on paper, Braxton Miller, right?
Yeah.
So we go into it, and it was a complete shit show. I'm talking about this guy cannot call a play, can't verbalize it. And so JT's looking at me like, what's the play? And I'm looking at him like, I wish I knew, bro.
It's not coming in your headphones. It's like, I don't know.
And so we're going through the scrimmage, and what's crazy is it was fan appreciation day. So there's like 3,000 students there watching, and it was a shit show. And mind you, I've been in the offense since 2005 at this point. This is 2015. So 10 years in the offense, like, and I'm not claiming to be some guru, but I can spit out a play. I mean, it's not that damn hard. And so we start getting through it, and I start helping him out. And we got about a quarter of the way through the scrimmage, and he's like, Zach, you just call it. Zach, call it. Zach, you call it. And so I ended up calling the rest of the scrimmage. Things went okay. And we get out of there, and he's like, comes in my office. He's like, hey, man, I really appreciate you bailing me out on that. And I'm sitting here like, you're the coordinator, man. I'm talking about $500,000 a year. Like, go study the plays. Like, talk in a mirror. I don't know what I'm going to tell my son one day. Like, go rehearse your speech before you give it. I don't know what to tell you. And so that all happens, right? And that's how the offseason goes. So we go into the season, and the whole offense has already completely lost respect for him to the point where we go into the season. And so this is how it goes pregame, right? Like, you arrive at the stadium, you let the players be, right? Like, let them put their headphones on, get ready for the game, get taped up. You know, they're listening to whatever they're listening to. They're getting in game mode, right? And so you let that happen. You go out, do warm-ups, whatever, and then you come back in. And then, you know, before Urban talks to the team, you split up offense, defense. And that's when the coordinator gets to talk to them. Whoa.
Really?
I'm talking about the most demotivating speeches I've ever heard. To the point where I found this out later, the specialists, like kickers and punters and people like that, long snappers, they would go to the offensive side with their cell phones and record the speeches. That's how bad they were. And it was to the point where Urban would, like, I don't know if he did this with every coach, but he'd pull me aside like, hey, after, you know, when Ed talks to him, it's going to be awful. Like, just grab your players and you got to fire them up. Like, you got to get in their shit and fire them up. And I'm sitting here like, this is, bro, I'm at Ohio State University.
It's the offensive coordinator.
This is the offensive coordinator. So we go through the year, and here's what's funny. Here's how talented that team was. That team was so talented, my daughter could have called plays, and we would have won all but one game. They were so talented. We would call plays sometimes, and we'd run it back, and Urban would get irate on Sunday, like, what is this play call? That's horrible. But you'd see Ezekiel Elliott would break two tackles, like, it's a horrible play call against that defense, and the players were so good, they made it work.
They would just overcome.
Yeah. And like,
be like, yeah, it's terrible.
And I had people that I know in the media, like, really know, like, former players that are on nationally syndicated shows texting me like, what are you guys doing on offense? Because they know. They're watching the film like, that's horrific. But the normal fan doesn't know. The normal fan doesn't know because Ezekiel Elliott just ran 50 yards for a touchdown. Michael Thomas just scored a touchdown. Like, what? JT Barrett just scored a touchdown. Like, what does it matter? They don't know any different.
Well, I think the normal fan does know about that Michigan State game.
So the Michigan State game was the best, right?
He ran, what, four or five times?
I mean, that was...
Just give Zeke four carries.
That's what everybody talks about, because it was just outrageous how that play was called, or how that game was called.
But here's the issue, and I have it. And you know what? I might post it on social media. I have so every game I carried a folder, which is kind of Urban-esque. Like, he always carried a folder, wrote on it, and obviously I learned from him. So I had a folder every game, and I would take my notes, mark things down, whatever. And we go in at halftime, and so I get in there early because they're all in the box. They're coming down, and I write down, and I'm sitting here like, Michael Thomas, I don't even know what he had at halftime. Maybe two touches, one touch. Maybe. And so I'm thinking about, like, we're struggling. We can't do anything. And I'm thinking about, all right, I have this guy who is an absolute stud. Like, never mind the fact that Zeke needs to get the ball. Mike needs the ball too. Like, what are we talking about? So I go in at halftime, and I write down 15 plays in our game plan that I'm like, I mean, they're basically, they weren't doing anything astronomical. They were basically loading the box to stop Zeke, and we didn't give Zeke the ball because of it, even though we should have. We didn't, They're daring us to throw the football. We have Michael Thomas. I don't know if anyone has watched NFL Sunday Ticket. We had Michael Thomas.
He's one of the best three receivers in the league, mind you.
Again. Again.
And so I wrote down, here's 15 plays to get Michael Thomas the ball. Because they're playing one-on-one coverage with a corner that will not get drafted, not ever play in the NFL. He'll get abused by Michael Thomas. Here's the plays, right? 15 plays. After we lost the game, I go back to the office Saturday night after the game. I didn't even go home. I slept in the office. I was so sick. Mainly because I knew I was going to have to face my players. And they were not going to be happy.
No.
Because my players all year had not gotten the football, but they were such good kids and had such a good culture that it didn't matter. As long as we were winning, it didn't matter. Michael Thomas, you talk about the most selfless player. He had an average year when he should have been an All-American because of play calling, and he did not bitch once until the Michigan State game. And not just him, the whole room. They walked in, and we didn't even watch the film. He was sitting there like, it's bullshit. Like, I could have helped the team win, and y'all didn't give me a chance. Yeah. And so I had an hour and a half meeting with my players on Sunday, didn't watch one clip of film, nothing. Sat there and tried to defuse a complete mutiny, right? And so that folder that I still have it, and I'll never not have it. I went through Saturday night, probably about 1 in the morning, and looked at the call sheet. We called zero plays that I recommended. Zero. Not that I had the answers, but...
Obviously, something.
Obviously, Edward.
Neither did Ed.
Edward didn't have the answers either.
Obviously, the plays they were calling weren't the answer either. So no. Maybe try one.
So here's the best part, right? We go through the season. So we obviously bounce back. We bounce back, and it was a complete testament to the culture, the players, how elite they were. Because even Urban was non-existent that whole next week. And this is a rivalry game. And he was like, he couldn't talk. He couldn't, his messages to the team, it was bad. Until pregame. He saw pregame, a team that had a fire lit under their ass. And all of a sudden, he gave a pregame speech, and I'll never forget it. The whole week, we're talking about it as coaches. Like, man, this guy's not with, like, he's not here. It reminded me of Florida right before he resigned the first time. Like, he was so distant. And we get to pregame, and those players lit a fire under him. And when he talked to the team in pregame, everyone, all the players and everyone were like, oh, shit. Like, he's back.
We're back.
That's my dude.
And so they went on, the players went on, obviously, a two-game performance that was outrageously good. And it was because they were so good. And Urban even told me after the fact, so he fired Ed after 2016. He told me after the fact, he was like, I wanted to fire him 2015. My plan was to fire him 2015. But the offensive performance, those two games after Michigan State, was so good, I didn't know how to justify it. Yeah. And,
yeah.
I mean, hindsight's 2020, should have. But it wasn't just that. Here's the craziest part. After I said that, Ed Warner was the reason. A former player at Ohio State reached out to me on Twitter and was like, man, you have to expose him. And I was like, calm down. Like, I'm not in the business of just exposing people to expose them. He said, I'm going to send you four stories. And they are a testament to how bad of a human being he is. And I was like, okay, I'm listening.
I'm excited. Yeah. I want to hear him.
I'll tune in for that.
And so here's the stories he sent me, right? So we had an offensive lineman that got married, right? He was struggling at Ohio State a little bit. Not a great player there. And so he got married, and I guess in a meeting here, this is a quote from a former player that was in the meeting with Ed, right? He said, Ed looked at him in a meeting and said, the way you play football leads me to believe that I think you'd let a D lineman break into your house, fuck your wife, abort the child, raid your fridge, and then leave without you doing shit about it.
Jesus.
I was like, Jesus Christ, man, that's his wife.
Hey, you talking about a man's wife? Man.
This is the tip of the iceberg, right? He also said that in the middle of the game, and I obviously was coaching my players, I didn't see this. I think we were playing a Big Ten team, he said. And in the middle, like third quarter of the game, someone missed a block. Ed collapsed to the ground in the fetal position and rocked back and forth like a baby on the field now.
That can't be right.
No, well, I've seen stuff like that. Never in a game because I didn't pay attention. But I guess until the next drive, to the point where our offensive line GA had to do the chalk talk on the board with the O line because Ed couldn't.
So he had a GA talking to the lineman before the next drive after his O lineman missed a block.
Yeah, because he
couldn't.
He couldn't get his mind right, right? And then the one story that he wanted to make sure I said, and I mean, it's, I don't know any validity to this, but I do. So we used to have pregame meal every Thursday, right? Every Thursday night, the families would come, pregame meal, you know, you and your family, your wife or whatever would eat with the players. And I guess his wife said this to this former player, Thursday meal. She said to him, like, she was talking about shopping or whatever. And she said, yeah, he can't say no when I ask for the credit card anymore. And they're like, why? He said, oh, because I caught him with a little mistress a few years back calling the house. And I stayed with him for money. So he's not allowed to say no when I want the credit card. She said this to players. And so that's all. That's not okay. But but what really bothered me about Ed was how he treated support staff.
Oh, really?
Every practice, his student manager, mind you, my student managers, I love them. They were awesome. They helped me out a ton. They didn't, you know, they got a little stipend for school, but
there to help.
They're there to help. His student manager was, he told him, when practice is over, you have a cold G2. If it's not cold, I'll throw it. You have to have it here waiting for me. And the former player even brought it up. He said, every single game, when the manager would come up to give him his headset, he would throw it on the ground in front of him so disrespectfully. And he'd treat those people like trash. He'd call them like, you're a fucking retard. He said, you are so easily replaceable. We don't need you. You should be grateful I even let you be my manager. Shit like that.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, it was awful. And it's one of those things, like, I've been around people like that. Like, we'll talk about other people like that later. Well, I'm just saying, I've been around people like that are also like very good at their job, like very competent. And it doesn't make it right. But this guy was also a clown. Like, he was terrible. And it's like, you talk about a false ego.
You have to be good at one thing.
I mean, not that it excuses anything, but he treated people like dog shit. Right. And he came at me one time, and it was by accident. And he apologized four times afterwards. It was on the headsets. He didn't know that I was the one telling him that he fucked something up. And he was like, I didn't fuck anything up. Don't talk to me like that. And I'll never forget it. I was on the headset. I said, hey, bro, if you ever fucking talk to me like that, I'll knock your front teeth through your back of your throat. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was you. I didn't know it was you. And it pissed me off even more because I was like, didn't know it was you. Just don't talk to people like that.
Maybe just don't be a dick.
So if it wasn't me, that's okay to say?
Oh, like, hey, and I'm going to tell you right now, he used to disrespect the players, but he knew which ones to do it. And one time he disrespected Noah Brown, which I coach Noah. Oh. Noah is a man's man. Don't you dare disrespect him, especially if you don't have a relationship with him. Oh, he was like flipping out because he called the wrong play. There was a fumble. Urban was pissed at him. He started freaking out on the players to back up, and he pushed like three players, and the third one was Noah. And Noah grabbed his arm, hit it off, and said, hey, bro, don't you ever put your hands on me again. And Ed was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was you. He was like, I didn't know it was you, Noah. I didn't know it was you.
And I'm saying, that's what matters.
Yeah.
Who it is?
If it was
matters.
Some other guy, yeah. It'd be fine.
Some and little peon.
Unbelievable.
I don't want to talk about Ed this whole episode, but I'm telling you, I could talk about Ed for 7 episodes in a row for an hour each and still have 100 stories. So I will end it at this. If there's a reason, and here's why I'm so passionate about it, because I love my players, and that group deserved
a national title.
Well, you know what they deserved? Was a shot at the national title. And then it was on them to win it. And they didn't get that. And they didn't get it because one man was incompetent. And you know who the other, and I had to put this out there. One of the scapegoats in all this is Tim Beck. Tim Beck walked into a room with JT Barrett, Cardale Jones, and Braxton Miller. 3 starters, 3 elite players. And he had to, like, new coach had to figure it all out. And he was also dealing with a coordinator that was a complete derelict, a complete dysfunctional human. And so he was thrown into the fire, like, unwarrantedly. And so he still kind of has a bad rap, like he didn't do a good job. And it's like, no, he did a great job for what he was given. He was given a screwed up situation. Urban didn't help that situation as far as quarterbacks are concerned. And then he was given Ed Warner as a leader calling the plays. And if you call shitty plays, the quarterback's the first to look horrible.
No, absolutely.
And that's not to take any onus off of like JT. Did he miss this? Of course, he missed a throw or two, whatever. JT also won national championship in 2014 with Tom Herman calling the plays. All right, so let's calm down. Let's calm down on it's JT's fault.
A lot of people would say he didn't, but.
No, he did. I mean, he got us there. Yeah. Anyways, it's not. That's the moral of the story, right? Is mm-hmm. Ed was the reason through and through, and there might be a couple other minor reasons, but ultimately, he cost Ohio State a national championship.
So that's a lot of dysfunction you just talked about for a coach in a very prominent position. But you've talked about other coaches that were not very good at certain aspects. He had to have some sort of redeeming quality or something, whether it be recruiting or whatever. So was he a good recruiter or what was it?
I doubt it. He might have been the worst recruiter I've ever been around.
Oh, man.
So, and part of it was because of how awful he treated people and how awful he treated his players. I recruited, I don't know, five to 10 linemen in my time with him at Ohio State. And it was horrible. Like, I've recruited all kinds of players, all different positions. And most of the time, when you tag team recruit a kid, it's phenomenal because it's like I recruited Jalen Holmes. Mike Vrabel and I recruited him. What more do you want than Mike Vrabel to help you recruit a kid? Or
take a look at my rings.
Right. Well, not only that, but I'm talking about a human being, like the charisma, the personality, how he relates to kids. Like, it was phenomenal. Kerry Combs, phenomenal. Like, Tom Herman, phenomenal. Like, name it. Phenomenal. Ed Warner, horrific.
How so? What do you mean?
Well, the biggest problem, there's two problems that I faced when I recruited a lineman. The first one was these kids would go to, let's visit other places. And I knew immediately if a kid was looking at Notre Dame and Ohio State, like, I might as well stop recruiting him because he's going to go on a visit to Notre Dame. And those kids are going to tell him how Ed was as a coach. There was at least four kids that I recruited that immediately after visiting Notre Dame cut us. Done. Like, really? Not coming. And I'll never forget, there was one kid I recruited from Maryland who was like the number one offensive tackle in the country, highly touted. It was like us, Alabama, Maryland, like some other schools. And he came to visit. And this was like five-star, all everything. And he came to visit. And so I'm not leaving his side. We're doing the official visit. I'm there for everything. I want to make sure everything goes smoothly. So I take him to his position meeting with Ed, right? This, like I said, this kid's looking at Alabama, Florida State, Maryland, because that's his hometown school, Ohio State. Oh, I forget the fifth one. The fifth one was someone really good, right? Someone
Clemson
elite.
Clemson or something like that.
Whatever. Yeah, I don't think it was Clemson, but it could have been. But either way, so he comes in. We go into the position meeting. So obviously I sit in on it because this is my top, one of my top four recruits that I'm recruiting. So we go in there and he starts doing his presentation about offensive line play, whatever. He has this cool PowerPoint. He starts clicking through it, right? All of a sudden it gets to like a school comparison graphic. Like, let's compare the schools. The schools on the graphic, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Michigan.
Not even schools that the guy's
looking
at.
And I'm sitting here like,
so none.
What is this? Come to find out, we're recruiting Jamarco Jones at the same time. And those are the schools Jamarco's looking at. He used Jamarco's presentation on this kid.
Who is the number one tackle in the country.
I'm sitting here like,
what?
What am I doing? Why did I let this kid even speak to Ed Warner?
You couldn't make a second PowerPoint?
Like, not even that. Take the PowerPoint you made. Change a couple slides.
Not that hard. You know what? Not even that. I've recruited kids of every position. Just stay out of it. And I'll be all right. Just don't fuck it up, Ed. And he couldn't not. Never mind the fact he can't relate to a young person ever. Urban had a thing, like, in recruiting. And he actually, when he made me the recruiting coordinator, 90% of the reason is to help Ed. Because he had this thing like, don't be a stiff white guy. That's what he used to always say. Don't be a stiff white guy. Because Ed could not talk to a kid, let alone a minority kid, like a black kid. Not a chance. Because he
couldn't relate.
He was so awkward. It was bizarre. And that was That was my nightmare story. But I never signed a lineman. You can go through it. I never signed an offensive lineman. I take that back. I did. One was Matt Burrell. Was a big time lineman, and I kept Ed so far away from him. I'm not even kidding you. The last person, Larry Johnson helped me recruit him because he knew the area. I recruited him. He was a highly ranked recruit, and he ended up transferring. But whatever. Either way, in recruiting, it was a huge get. We beat Penn State and everybody. Everybody offered him, and 90% of the reason why is because I was like trying to keep Ed so far away from this kid. I'm like, Jesus, don't talk to him.
Yeah, your position coach will be fine. Just don't worry about that.
Yeah,
just don't let Ed around.
Yeah,
and I'm not recruiting this guy.
Recruiting's all about relationships, anyways, and he didn't know how to build one. So, all right. I want to break this up and get away from football for a minute because I want to honor a segment that we're going to do weekly with 25,000 listeners. It's hard to pick one, but we're going to identify this week's listener of the week. Well, this week's Listener of the Week is a segment that we kind of came up with after the first episode. With 25,000 listeners, it was, you know, hard to single one out until I checked Twitter Monday night after dropping the podcast. And our Listener of the Week this week is my ex-wife. She apparently was a listener, so we would have had 24,999 if it wasn't for her listening. And it was funny because I got screenshots sent to me from mutual friends, and initially it was just instant reaction to the podcast, right? And I imagine she, like a lot of people, was expecting this unhinged man, my Twitter persona, my Twitter rants, expecting this outlandish human being on a podcast, right?
Yeah, for sure. So what was her initial reaction? Well, I didn't see this.
It was all commentary about the podcast, what was said about how I brought up that she was vindictive and she wanted to comment on that. And then it was about the contempt of court that I mentioned. And what was crazy is just getting into divorce court and kind of custody cases, you know, there's some things that the court will, you know, in a divorce process or custody case, they will put certain documents, certain testimonies in what's called family files. And that is sole purpose of those family files are to protect the children, right? Yeah. It may be something about the kids or something about their mom or their dad that they want to protect from, especially in this scenario, because the media will have access to a lot of things. And so they protect them in family files. And one of the things she said was about the contempt of court. And she said the media should dig into the sealed family files.
So she wants the media to go in and unseal files that are meant to protect your children?
I mean, on Twitter, on social media, she's trying to promote the media to go in to family files to try to get access to things that were put in a file to protect her own children. Think about that. But what my favorite part of all of it was, I responded, oh, looks like someone was listening. And immediately her Twitter was deactivated and deleted. And then I got a screenshot sent that from Facebook, I believe it is, it says, she had said, for those that have commented on me not responding to recent events and stating that it must be true if I'm silent, think again. And she posted this meme about never wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty and the pig likes it. And it's hilarious because you didn't remain silent. You tweeted about it.
Right.
So I know it fits the narrative. But here, the one thing about our Listener of the Week that I feel is very, very relevant and has yet to be brought up is kind of the one thing about our listener that has yet to be brought up and I have yet to share that I think is very telling is kind of our relationship and how it went down. And I've recently found out she's engaged. So congrats. Cheers.
Oh, good.
Cheers to a happy life, happy marriage. What's so funny is that relationship, her mom put something on social media about how they got engaged and how 1 year ago this past weekend was when she ended her relationship with her mom, kicked her out of her apartment because her boyfriend had broken up with her because I was too much to handle. He couldn't handle that she was the ex-wife of an Ohio State football coach. And apparently from a couple different people that are no longer in her life that used to be very intimately in her life, he had told her that if she could find a way to get rid of me, he would you know, propose to her, they could get married and live this fairy tale life. And so that was the start of it all, the criminal trespass and so, everything.
Yeah, that's what really got the snowball.
Well, and here's what's funny is after the criminal trespass, which obviously we didn't go to trial on because I just wanted it to be over with. I'd already lost my job and the media frenzy, and I was trying to protect my kids. So, I pled to, disorderly conduct or something stupid. I paid $100 and that was the end of it. Because the Delaware County prosecutor just refused to dismiss the charges because of the media frenzy. What was so funny about it, right? That was in May of 2018. In June of 2018, my ex-wife and her boyfriend broke up. And right after they broke up, she met me for dinner at Kinsale Country Club and with the kids, came back to my house. We all hung out. We were intimate afterwards. I know I was this dangerous human being that beat her. But
she still was coming around.
Coming around a lot. And I'm sure her fiance doesn't know about it. But yeah, June 2018, I came to Kinsale. We had a nice dinner, hung out with the kids.
Nice family dinner.
Yeah, nice family dinner. And it's just funny because I actually I got offered a job at Alabama in January of 2018. And, Urban did a good job recruiting me to stay. And talk about hindsight's 2020. Boy,
yeah.
If I'd have taken that job, I wouldn't have been through this mess. But it also was funny about bad decision to hire me, right? I got offered a job by Alabama.
Urban whatever the show, he said, bad decision.
Yeah, bad decision to hire me. But when Alabama offered me a job, it was like fight to keep me and really wanted me to stay. And I was very valuable and I was a good coach, but whatever. Yeah. But I also wanted to talk about, a lot of people are talking about these contempts of court. And I just want to explain something about custody cases and divorce law that people don't think either haven't experienced it or don't understand. So filing contempt of court, like why I filed contempt of court is for really one reason, time with my kids. And it's very black and white. A court document that is from a judge says you are to give the kids to your wife or husband, let's say Wednesday at 6 o'clock, right? That's what it says. And it's not that hard to figure out. Like if you don't bring those kids at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, you are violating a court order. And here's how it works. You file contempt of court. You file it with the court and you say, all right, this person is in contempt of court. They violated a court decree. And what happens is nothing. Yeah. Until a court date, which right now is end of August, I think we have 20 filings of contempt of court. And why she's not been found in contempt of court is because we haven't been to court yet. Yeah. So there's plenty of validity to the contempt of court. And I guess end of August is when we will be able to prove that there's contempt of court. But it's very real. It's very black and white. There's not a whole lot that you can do to defend it. It's simple. Yeah. You bring the kids on Wednesday or you don't. And if you don't, you're found in contempt of court. I know for some people that is really hard to figure out.
So what she's saying on social media or whatever about not never being in contempt, she means she's never been found guilty of contempt because she's never gone to court for it.
Right. It's like if you kill someone and you're on trial for murder, you're not a convicted murderer, but you still killed someone. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But and it's funny, if you really wanted to dive into my custody and what I'm dealing with on the other end. So she's filed one thing of contempt of court on me, and it's for like $150 for dance recitals and things like, it's all financial. It's all about getting money from me, trying to destroy me financially. And I certainly have not. I've afforded her a great life, but all my contempt of courts are all about hurting the kids and about stop hurting the kids and weaponizing the kids against me. And it tells a story, right? One side is all about money. The other side is all about protecting and caring about kids. And so our listener of the week, my ex-wife, thanks for listening. I'm sure you'll listen again this week. And we just wanted to say thank you for your loyal listenership. I do also want to bring up something that we plan to do, and I plan to do, and I'm very passionate about it. We're in the process of creating a charitable trust, which is going to be kind of a nonprofit. I'm still working through the legal details, but it's going to be a fund, a foundation that is going to do fundraising, take donations, with the sole purpose of this being helping men that are being mistreated, or maybe not mistreated, but that are being taken advantage of by the courts, because the courts are very sexist towards women. And I think it's wrong, especially in cases where maybe both sides deserve equal rights or time with the kids, or maybe the father's the better fit parent. And the problem is that's extremely difficult, if not impossible,
for a man to win. And so we're going to create a charitable trust and probably a nonprofit to try to help men that fit that mold, that are great fathers, that want what's best for their kids, put their kids' best interests first. And we're going to create this to hopefully try to make an impact and try to make a change and help kids that deserve their fathers. All right, well, the perfect way to follow up the listener of the week is to get into this week's Twitter Tough Guy. All right, this week's Twitter Tough Guy was a woman that, when everything started coming out, was extremely vocal, extremely against me, extremely supportive of all the people that thought I was a scumbag. And it goes back to last week, right? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And so this woman, one of my best friends, kind of got irate about this woman that was just going on tirade after tirade about me, seeing as she had no idea what reality was or what was real. And so they did a little research, and this woman's name was Carrie Stearns. And I don't want to go into the details of kind of this tragedy she went through, but basically she gave her son up for adoption, regretted it later, tried to go back and get him, started GoFundMe pages. People were trying to help her because it was a very sob story, like a very heartfelt. This mom wanted her child back. And I don't want to go into that because it sounds like an awful situation. But what was hilarious was apparently someone helped her set up the GoFundMe page and all the fundraising to try to help her fight to get her kid back. And she started becoming very irritated and very demanding that people weren't donating enough and she needed more money and all this stuff. And what there was a number of articles written because she started doing fraudulent things. For instance, someone who really, I guess, fell in the trap and wanted to support this poor mommy that didn't have her child anymore. And so they sent her a private donation, wrote her a check, $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really
nice. What a nice thing to do.
What a nice thing. So you know what is a good way to repay a nice favor? Is she took that check, the checking account information, and started paying her bills with that person's checking account.
Way.
Absolutely she did. And so she fraudulently started using these people's money to pay her electric bill, to pay all these bills, because that's what you do when people help out someone in need. You take advantage of them. And so what was funny is it goes back to this Twitter tough guy, right? You are just this righteous person. You are Jesus Christ. You can judge everyone. And you have no flaws. But Carrie Stearns, you are our Twitter tough guy of the week because you have no room to judge like none of us do. We are not God. We are not a judge. We don't wear white wigs. So how about you keep your opinion to yourself? And here's what's funny. Our good friend started putting it out there, and I ran with it. I was shocked. I was like, oh, here we go. This lady is really coming to kill me in social media, yet you have your own skeletons in your closet, Carrie. And so I started tweeting about it, and she started direct messaging me like, I'm sorry. I don't know the full story. And here's the problem, America. You can't do that. You can't publicly say something about someone, and if they publicly say something about you back, you got to deal with it. That's called reality. Reality. And so we just wanted to bring Carrie up because we think the world should know Carrie needs to shut her mouth and stop talking about people. So future Twitter tough guys are going to be really fun, and I'm excited about them. All right, well, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. I really wanted to talk about some recruiting stories, some of the stuff that I talked about in the first episode, and specifically the Adidas stuff that goes on the West Coast that I have information about and want to talk about. Some other things I want to talk about, like this Brett McMurphy article about how I was a racist, right?
Oh, yeah.
And Trayvon Grimes' dad and his rants and his relevancy. And some of the other things that will definitely be discussed, and I apologize we didn't get to it. But again, just want to thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it was entertaining. Hope you took something from it. Again, our DMs are open. We're going to do a Q&A here in the next episode or two. So if you have any questions, feel free to submit them in our DMs. Also, if you want to email us on our website and send an audio clip of you asking a question, we'll play the audio clip and then answer your questions. So feel free to do that. Again, it's menacetosocietypodcast.com, and you can find us all our information on there. And then also we have a YouTube channel. Please subscribe
And be sure to check those out. We will have video content coming soon in the next month or so. We'll try to convert this to a video podcast. And then also we're available on iTunes, on Apple, and then on Google Play, Spotify. So make sure you find us, subscribe, download, and support our podcast, because we think it's going to be something really entertaining, really educational, really informative, and hopefully motivational to some extent. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. If you like it, we appreciate it. We appreciate your support. And if you don't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Menace to society.